Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on nature for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media to just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say, fuck them. That's straight.
What did that man say?
I think that man said it was fuck them. I'm pretty sure it was.
Yes, it was.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Good.
Well, very well. Just doing fine. I'm doing fine. Something on my mind. I want to kind of get that off. We are located, my brother and I, have Kennedy's Custom Cycles in Oceanside, California. We are right next to Camp Pendleton, which is one of the largest Marine Corps training facilities, I believe.
Right.
Or Marine Corps base, anyway. And we've had approximately 30,000 troops come back in the past couple of weeks. Two consecutive weeks, I've had extremely large Marines. And coincidentally, both on a fat boy, not that it means anything in life. But these guys came in, and the story was so identical, I want to share with everybody. Out of their squad,
We're the only two to come back, right?
Yeah. Everybody else is dead. And the more these two guys, they don't know each other. They've never been in my shop before. But they were heard to go in, they were told to come down and talk to people at a shop about the problem. Post-traumatic stress. Well, let me tell you one of the side effects of it. Now, I did mention these were, large Marines, extremely violent. All they had in their mind was lashing out at something. I'm sorry, folks. These guys are confused. They're hurt. Coincidentally, both of them lost their wives. The wives didn't want to stay with him. Both of them were blown up. Thank you. Phil got me a drink so I could stop coughing. The wives didn't want to stay with him because these guys did not come back the same person they left. They have so much
anger.
Thank you. That's the best way to say that. Anger at themselves, anger at the community, anger at everybody. And both of them are leaving the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps is letting them go. This is the part
sure.
I kind of stand.
Don't treat it, just release.
That's it. That's the part I want to talk about tonight. We have got two very violent people, which have already been blown up, lost a lot of people, and they're extremely emotional. I'm not going to say these tough guys are going to start crying, but I'm telling you, they got lost for a while. All we're doing is we're sending them home. They don't want to go home. They don't want to. They should leave the Marine Corps. But the Marine Corps is just, I'm not bad-mouthing the Marine Corps now, I'm just stating the fact, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. We sent our young sons and daughters overseas to fight for America, and in some cases, they don't come back.
Nope.
And it should
or
be
if they
our
do come back, then that's the same person.
Yes. It should be our responsibility to tell every one of our sons and daughters who are overseas, hey, we will not leave that country until we bring every one of you home. But we have POW MIAs, that's an issue to deal with. But this post-traumatic stress, these are young men, early 20s, they're not rap types. These are not the people you want to walk into at a bar and bump into them and spill beer because they are just looking to let this aggression go. So we talked about motorcycles for a long time, about exhaust pipes, and we talked about carburation, we talked about fuel injection. What we did was at the shop, we tried to diffuse these people, but I think sometimes it's only a temporary stop, kind of like that little boy putting his thumb and his finger in the dikes. Remember that story, everybody? Well, at some point in time, there's going to be more holes and he's got fingers. These people, we're letting them out of the Marine Corps. They're going home. Iowa, Chicago, New York. We're not treating them.
No.
I was always taught in college, you're not supposed to be talking about stuff if you don't have answers. But I don't have answers. I have so many freaking questions, and I'm so sick of seeing these young Marines come in. And, you know, of course, when I see them, they're clean cut, you know, they're just, but they're lost. Again, they're not looking around for a fight, but these guys are not going to step aside for a fight. They're going to go to a bar and get drunk, and somebody's going to get and spill beer or something on them, and that's going to be it. Boom. Now what are they going to have? They're going to have a criminal record. This is all tied in. Oh, they shouldn't have been in the bar drinking. Boys and girls, that's a stupid statement. Everybody drinks or doesn't drink according to what they want to do. The point is, my statement is, this post-traumatic stress, we have to take better care of our young men and women coming back, because what's going to happen to them? They don't have an answer. They don't know why they're sick, and they are sick, believe me. Like these guys that were blown up, their physical injuries are healing, but not the mental stress. It's like, what's that, 1,000-yard stare? Is that a film?
1,000-yard stare.
1,000-yard stare. That's what they have. And they're being very polite to me. You know, Mr. Kennedy this, Mr. Kennedy that, Mr. Kennedy, I was told to come down here and all that. It takes a lot of my time, which I will gladly give, but I can only help so many people. So I guess we're asking tonight, Phil and I, stay active in your community. Find our sons and daughters that are coming home to your community, whatever town it is. Find out if they need help. Now, you're not doctors, you're not psychiatrists, but maybe you can befriend these people.
Well, you know, Bill, being in combat consumes you. You become completely focused on the now. Thoughts of home and family are pushed completely from your mind as you look in 100 directions at once. That is an IED or just a pile of trash. Where would a sniper hide? Are those kids just playing, or are they lookouts for an insurgent ambush? Where are my teammates? Is that a tripwire? Does that man in the distance have a shovel or a rifle? Is he digging an IED or fixing a broken pipe? So you're completely immersed in what is happening at the moment. You're consumed by your mission, completely focused on what's happening around you, because you are never more than a split second away from absolute chaos of a firefight or an IED attack. You're always looking for cover, for something to dive behind when the bullets start flying. You become attuned completely to the environment and as one with your teammates. So it's it's that level of intense and singular focus is crucial to survive in combat.
Mm-hmm.
It's also impossible to seamlessly turn off when you come home.
You know, everybody wears those T-shirts.
Also impossible to seamlessly turn off when you come home.
Everybody wears T-shirts, funny sayings and all that, right? And we have Harley T-shirts and everything.
Yeah.
This guy had a T-shirt that said, "Stay 100 meters away or you will be shot."
Right.
This is pretty basic. I mean, he's getting the message out, leave me the blankety blank alone. He's a big boy, like I said. I know I said it several times because sometimes you think of Marines, you think of tunnel rats, you think of, small. This was a big boy. Both the two gentlemen the past 2 weeks have been in my shop have been some, I won't say they're roided out, but they're muscled out anyway. They're looking for something. And if we can't give them a positive path to go, what's the alternative positive path?
You know.
That's right. That's right.
Well,
the last thing we need is to have these people back in prisons.
Exactly.
And for what? They weren't like that. We sent them overseas.
No.
Don't we have responsibility, again, for our sons and daughters?
You can ask the ladies.
Ask somebody. Who do we have on the line first, Phil?
Nora and
who's that? Stacey. Let's start with, what's the bottom one, 508?
Start, Stacey.
508, hey. You're live. Are you with us tonight?
I'm alive. I'm with y'all. Lots going on. my
or
daughter.
A girl.
We know it's a girl from, ultrasounds before, but she's just putting along real slowly. They said that the baby's probably going to stay, I guess, in the hospital for like a week. Because she's like 5 weeks early and they want to like make sure the baby is maintaining weight and its lungs are okay, et cetera, et cetera. So, I just talked to her just shortly ago and she wasn't too happy with what was going on. So I said, you should have thought about that before you went and made the baby. But, we're all excited. Just waiting for that, and, that's about it.
We're talking about all these problems in life, but truly, new life, children, that's the hope for everything. That's what keeps us going. And we want our children and our grandchildren to have a better life than we have. So I'm going to make any sacrifices for my family, as I'm sure all of our listeners are. So every now and then we say, God, things are bad, but we forget that we have wonderful things like birth. And you had a grandbaby just not that long ago.
Exactly.
Yeah. What did you have, brother?
A girl.
I might know that, but I don't want anybody else to know that. Okay.
All
right. Okay. Well, who else we got on the air tonight? I want to talk to some other people. What else we got up tonight? How about 708-539? You're on the air tonight. We'll say hello to you.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Phil. It's Nora. Hi, Stacy. Congratulations, Grandma to be.
Hey, thank you so much.
You know, I already told you in a text. I'm always here. I'm so excited for you. I can't wait for my grandson to come. Anyhow, talking about the topic for this evening, it's a wonderful thing, and I'm going to say why. I had a stepdad that came back from them. Everybody thought I was loonier than a nut bin, and he wasn't. The post-traumatic stress disorder was so intense. Growing up in the house was like you're in the war zone with him. You always slept with a loaded gun.
Well, you know, life outside the wire in a combat unit is pinnacle of stress and morass of boredom, with every minute lasting an hour and every hour lasting an eternity.
You're going to be quite the poet there.
I know.
Well, I understand that, but I've also dealt with it firsthand. You know,
somebody was shooting bullets?
It pissed me off. What?
Somebody was shooting bullets at you?
No. He had a gun in his hand. You know, while he was sleeping.
Don't let him sidetrack. Continue on, please.
No, he's not. But, you know, when he woke up, he thought he was back in the bush, you know. And so we were all gooks. And I'll never forget it. You know, I'd have to hide in the closet or whatever. I thought, oh, God, here it comes, you know. It's not pleasant, you know. It traumatizes a house. But at that time, and I don't think the times have changed probably is in a lot in the decades, okay, from Vietnam, from World War One, whatever the case may be. I don't think anything has helped in regards to treat the post-traumatic distress order. You know, they train everybody to go over there to kill, but they don't train them to come back. And it's not a question of training them to come back. It's a question of adapting back from a war zone, you know. Today's day and age is a complete different war than anything else. It's similar in regards to you don't know who the enemy is. They all look alike. It's not being racist or anything like that. But they put children in harm and everything else. They don't care who they use to get to their target, okay? But I agree with Bill. You know, something has to be done because there's too many men and women coming back and they're so messed up and so screwed up and nobody understands it. They don't want to deal with it. They want to just shove pills or whatever the case may be and push them in their way. It doesn't work like that.
You know, there's more vets in the last 10 years living on the street than there is anywhere else in the world.
And right now, there are more vets committing suicide every single week than ever.
I already know.
More than
Vietnam. I actually saved one some months back. Well, not that long ago, but so thought I was a goofball. Because I can't save the world. But I saved one, and I wanted to commit suicide. And it was a good day for that moment, you know. And what do you do? These guys are hurting, even the women, they're hurting, they're in pain. Nobody can understand the depths of what they see, what they dealt with, day in and day out, you know.
And let's look at the big picture for a second here. We have married men going overseas with children, coming back, and their head's in a different place. The wife can't deal with this. The wife's got to raise the children. Okay. So the families are breaking up. And now we've got single mothers trying to raise children, and what do they say about why isn't daddy here? How can children understand, well, my daddy's all messed up because of the war? No. But this is affecting us. We have children, single women, children. Where are the husbands? They can't raise families. They barely can take care of themselves.
Exactly. And I was going to say, how can they handle a situation? How can the wives, girlfriends, whatever the case may be, or just the families, how can they handle a situation when they don't know how to deal with it?
Exactly.
You know, it's not like they send pamphlets home ahead of time and, hey, this is what we want you to read up on or go in and, you know, counseling for whatever. Be prepared for what's coming.
Let's not forget the families, too, that live on base and are used to having, you know, discounts on different things, you know, because they are actively living on base, and all of a sudden that folds up shop. You know, they have to come back out here into what they call the real world and maybe have to pay more rent or not live in quite such a good area, you know, different things like that. And to acclimate from everybody kind of respecting everybody to, you know, when you're out here, it's every man for himself. That's a tough adjustment, too.
Well, you know, and the sad thing is, you know, these men and women are hurting really bad, and they don't know how to express it because they've had to endure so much, see so much, had to you know, I couldn't imagine waking up every day and hearing bombing or gunshots or everything, what they go through. I couldn't imagine it.
And through downtown Chicago, you'll hear that shit every day.
Well, hello, duh. I understand that, but I'm in an actual war zone. You know, you're
that
in a different
war
country.
Zone.
Well, yeah. But it's different in the regard of, you know.
How's it different? My brother.
Brother's
a fireman.
Things.
They have to wait for the cops to show up before they can go in. But then when they go in, they're happy to see them. They're more happy to see them than they are the cops because they know somebody's going to help them.
Right. Well,
you
like I said, you know, the point being is that they don't know how to, as Stacy said the best word, to acclimate back. And, you know, I'll never forget. My mother went to go divorce my stepdad. He came in fully packed. Fully ready to shoot out the damn courtroom. And, you know, they had to wait for the MPs from the Great Lakes, you know, station or whatever base, you know, to get there. And, you know, he was calm. He was calm. He just sat there with his shotgun loaded, laying in his lap, in hand. You know, but the point being, what does it take to wake people up? You know, I remember these nightmares. You know, being a kid and, you know, oh, my God, why do we have to hide? You know, why does he have a gun? You know, and most kids didn't go through that back then. You know what I mean? Now it's almost like an everyday occurrence. You know, almost every home has a gun of some sort, you know, whatever the case may be. But it's not used in regards to violence. You know, the point being they need help. And why are they homeless? You know, they struggle. Nobody wants to hire
about
them.
If I have for a second, I'm sorry for interrupting you.
That's okay.
We came back, a friend of mine came back in 1971, and we didn't know what he had. Nobody knew what he had. We now know Agent Orange. We didn't know what it was. But the VA hospital would use experimental drugs on him and everybody else. I would see him on a Friday. And the first thing out of his mouth was, "Hey, Bill, how you doing, Bill? Everything's great, blah, 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 blah." And the very next week, on a Friday, he's coming home from the VA hospital. And I say, "Bill." He'd go, hey, Bill. Hey, man, how you doing? So this man here is living the emotions to the extreme. Now, can he sustain a marriage? No. How can you be married to a person that is so down one day, 1 week later he's so up? How can you maintain a job? This friend of mine was a smart guy, but who the hell can keep the guy hired? He'd go in one day, you couldn't speak to him because he's not catatonic, but he was almost close to it. He went through a couple marriages because when he was up, he was a real happy guy. When he was down, he was so down. Now, what this experimental drugs that they were giving him at the time, how did it affect his body? I'm going to share this with you. His immune system became so weak that a simple cold turned into pneumonia, and they couldn't even do anything to stop it because his body had so much drugs in it already. Young man succumbed to cold and pneumonia in America? Come on, we should be able to solve this. But his immune system, because all the experimental drugs they were giving this poor guy in 1971, he couldn't come through. He didn't last to see 72. Hang on a second. I get out in January 71. Yeah. I came home in January 71. He came home right after me. He didn't see 72. Before that, he and I used to ride up and down California. I had a K-Mall Sporty. He had a Sporty. Two young kids were out to see the world. One tour overseas, and his whole life was done. He can't maintain. He couldn't maintain a marriage. Couldn't do a job. And people don't understand. I see his kids, and his kids still to this day, of course, they're all grown up now. They're just now understanding why their daddy was so different when he came home. Because we're just now starting to understand Agent Orange. So, again, I'm asking everybody to look for those vets in your neighborhood. I can't reach everybody. We're only human. We got to take care of ourselves and our family first. But, Jesus, guys, these men and women need our help. Philip and I are trying to do what we can, and I know many of you are doing it also, but I'm trying right now, I get frustrated, because the drugs, I can't compete against the drugs. I can't even have intelligent conversation, dialogue, communication between two people. I can't do it, because sometimes it's only me, and his mind is gone. So anyway, sorry to get on my soapbox again. I asked you people to be more responsible and shut me off when I get on my soapbox. Somebody's got to take responsibility on that. All right?
I will. You're done. Now let's hear a little bit of Dr. Love, and then we can get on with the show, because I know this is CC's best part.
All
right. Please. Thank you.
All right. We have some interesting people coming in tonight and all that. So.
Yeah, but, you know, go ahead.
No, you want to say something else about
Go ahead.
How did you feel about your friends that came back, that even though they were still your friends, they weren't the same people?
No.
How the hell can you communicate with them? They didn't. Their likes and dislikes were so changed.
They disappeared.
They all lost
down the road.
Yeah.
Lost track. Every once in a while, I get a phone call from out of nowhere.
I got another quick friend. I don't know why. This is coming down memory alley. He got so screwed up on the drugs, not from the hospital, but from the street drugs. I heard he was up in the desert, and I went out and found him. He traded his panhead in for Honda Goldwing and drugs. And I'm looking and thinking, I can't understand that. I mean, I'm not bad-mouthing Honda. I'm just saying, you got a panhead. I can't see it. By the way, what happened to him? I'm going to tell you the same thing. They found him in a Dipsy dumpster. He was dead. Pneumonia, his immune system became so weak from the drugs he couldn't take and all that. But first his mind went, and then because we're bringing young men back and young women, they're strong.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, the body breaks down. So, alrighty, again, I'm drifting away.
And
somebody bring me back.
You better give him some Dr. Love.
Okay, we need some Dr. Love. We're going to love you after you give us some Dr. Love. How's that?
Maybe I can do it later on today. I'm telling you, I got my ass the past couple of weeks with these young vets coming in here. It tears me up.
You know, while we're waiting for T-Rod to call in, I wanted to. We'll get to that later. But what?
I've got something very important to say.
Go for it.
Okay.
I officially have been 96 hours smoke free.
Yay!
Yay.
One day I'll do that.
Carry on.
Cigarettes or chocolate?
Cigarettes, dude. Cigarettes.
Puff, puff, pass.
Yeah. No. Gave up the Marlboro Lights. Had enough.
Okay. But
I'm smoke free. I'm going to tell you right now, I say congratulations to you because it was not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Coming home from the military, I certainly was excessive everything in there. And I sat down and said, I am more powerful than these artificial things out there. So I don't want you guys to think I'm a goody two shoes or anything, but Philip understands this. No to drugs, no to alcohol, no to cigarettes, no to coffee.
Right.
And I'm still trying to work on that no swearing stuff. I go to any bar in San Diego. As soon as I walk in the door, they got free drinks for me right away because the volume goes down and the real drunks say, hey, hey, Bill's here. Try to act sober. So the barmaids love me in San Diego. But it was a decision I made not because of a religious thing or moral thing. I just decided I'm stronger than that.
Right.
At that time, I was involved in situations where my mind had to be clear 24 hours a day. So that, first of all, the drugs had to go.
Well, you know, Bill,
and the alcohol had to go because I had to make decisions revolving a lot of people. And
true.
I couldn't have that stuff in my body.
No.
That's only my thoughts. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. I'm so proud of you. Can I send you some cookies?
Hey, sure. Why not?
Yeah, it'll go good with that chocolate.
Give her some marijuana brownie. She'll feel better.
Sure, I don't do those.
You guys are so bad. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, you guys like Puff Puff Pass. I'm like the only goody goody here.
She says, well, you guys like Puff Puff Pass. What in the hell kind of language is that?
Well, you know, I got this the other day, and, you know, there's no cell phone, or there's no privacy for us cell phone users. And the United States argues that the government need not obtain probable cause search warrants for cell phone user data. Because
right.
Customers have no reasonable expectation of privacy, a Justice Department lawyer argued Tuesday before the Fifth Circuit Court. A senior counselor for the Justice Department Computer Crime and Intellectual Property Section argued that because cell phone companies store usage information at their own discretion, they act as witnesses in a criminal investigation where any relevant information is admissible without a search warrant.
Wow.
That's why, careful what you say.
Uh-huh.
On the telephone, be careful what you say. The people that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Sound like we're all paranoid. I'm just telling everybody, just be.
Absolutely, because Tuesday's hearing stems from a government bid for judicial orders authorizing the disclosure of 60 days of location data to cell phone companies as part of a routine investigation. Judge Stevens rejected the government's request in 2010, saying they needed to apply for search warrants supported by a probable cause, and a federal judge agreed. The Justice Department is now appealing that decision to the Federal Appeals Court in New Orleans. One of three judges on the Fifth Circuit panel suggested that maybe Smith required a search warrant because cell phone technology is forever advancing and future cell phone records might reveal much more than they do today. The Federal Appeals Court need not address possible future technology. In fact, they should reasonably expect to be tracked by them. Without a warrant, agents are engaging in massive surveillance of people. He said the United States claims a warrant is not required for this information. See? We're getting fucked, Bill. Electronic Frontier Foundation in San Francisco said technology is advanced enough that cell phone records can reveal not just where people have been, but also the patterns where they go on a regular basis, the bakery, a mosque, a gay bar, for example. Now, I don't know where they picked those three words from, but...
Bakery, I know that one.
Yeah. Did cell phone towers...
Topless bar, to say topless bar?
No.
Oh, okay. That's what I find.
Cell phone towers are continuously being built to advance cell phone technology, and that the location of specific towers reveals increasingly more locations of the cell phone user. And they took 250 cell phone towers within a two-mile radius of the courthouse where the hearing was held. Cell phone records can easily indicate that not just the customer's general location... Which is specific intersection.
I hate that word.
Yeah.
Specific. I hate saying that. Specific. I hate saying
intersection
that conversation.
Or possibly even to what portion of a building a cell phone or a user has been.
When I take over as President of the United States, that word specific will be taken out of the language. I can't say it. I spit it out. If I look at the word, I can say it clearly. But in my making a speech, I get right to that word in my mind. I have to change that word. That's a weak. Is there anybody else have a weird word but me? Specific. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I also hate cell phones. Hate them. I don't need to take cell phones out of my vocabulary. However, yeah, we don't need this. Ladies and gentlemen, remember our grandparents and our great-grandparents?
Oh, remember 15 years ago who had a cell phone? You were carrying a brick.
No. I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't mean to sound doom and gloom today, and I really apologize if I am coming across more negative than I am. I just deal with a lot of these stressful situations at our bike shop. These guys are coming to me because they're saying, I was told by the counselors at Camp Pendleton to come down and spend some time with you because the therapy they're working with, trying to put a round peg in a square hole,
doesn't work.
It ain't working. They got these guys, you know, they have them trying to work on, teach them how to play an instrument. Stress off.
We're dialing up. He said he's had a bad reception when he's at.
Wow.
Yeah, this is T-Rod. Leave a message and I'll call you back.
Okay.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up.
Phil's trying to call somebody so we go on the air. We have a really We have a really special guest. But if you don't hook him up, I'm going to be awful embarrassed, so I'm not going to say who
he
is.
No, yeah.
We lost the guy. I'm not going to build the guy up. But he is a good friend of ours. He's a living legend in California. He's also a, pretty damn big guy.
Yeah.
No, sir. I'm going to be
the lady's going to be a freak tonight. This boy is, he's Rico Suave.
That's if we can get him back, Bill.
Yeah.
But the other one, Bill, was the fact that, let me get to it here real quick. There's a new California law, Bill.
No. In the city of Carlsbad, well, you're looking about that. That's the very next town to us. They just now outlawed smoking in outside patios. My wife, she's about having a cow. Because city by city by city, they're taking away the outside. She can't smoke in the restaurants, all right? That's life. Can't smoke outside. And as you and I know, some of the local cities, is it Del Mar?
Mm-hmm.
You can't smoke in the whole damn city. It's getting a little bit bizarre.
It's also getting crazy where they have smoking areas at the beach.
Yeah. And I was reading the report today, the city council up in San Francisco, they're getting mad because, you know, there's nudity all over San Francisco. Well, they don't think you should walk down the main street nude. Gay parades are okay, and perhaps the city parks are okay, but you shouldn't be allowed to walk nude to work. It could offend some people. I just have to wonder about the people in San Francisco. This is an issue.
Yeah.
You're mad because you can't walk nude to work? Get a life. There's more important things.
Yeah. Well, said that Delmar's been like that for years, which is Miriam. And then we got pirate writers calling us. They're listening in tonight. Yes, there is a show tonight. And then going to have to start paying for your shopping bags, paper and plastic.
Yeah.
They're gonna get you coming or going.
Pretty much you gotta bring your own bag with you now to go shopping. They don't want you using that stuff there.
Let me see if I can get this call again.
We're gonna try it right now. This will be an interesting. He's got a slight accent too. You like the accent, Lee. Pick up the damn.
Yeah, this is T-Rod. Leave a message and I'll call you back.
We don't want your damn answering machine. This is Bill and Phil. You're live on the air. Pick up the phone. Or get on your motorcycle and ride all the way up here real quick. Get on the show. We don't want your dumb machine. I really shouldn't aggravate people that much bigger than I am. We're having a good time here.
Yeah. Right. So, Miriam says LA's doing that too.
Yeah, that's true.
She also sent us a heart and a laugh.
Yeah.
And she says she's going to call. Okay, that'll work.
Oh, Phil, did you tell Bill about the package that's going to come to your house?
No, I didn't, and that's not the place for this.
It's a surprise. No, I wasn't going to say anything more. Okay.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
You two got secrets again, I understand.
Yes, we do. And you know what? You'll find out.
My friend Marion's on the phone here. Marion and I have known each other.
She
up?
No, she's not here yet.
Okay, then. She's okay.
Well, while we're waiting, is there any kind of links or websites that you both may know that have anything in regards to helping vets coming back? Do they have anything like that yet?
I'll tell you the best thing you can do is call your local VA.
Is they're going to give you organizations which have been investigated, and we know they're clear.
Correct.
Okay.
Philip and I are so reluctant to give advice out anymore because we're finding out people got their fingers in the pie, and it's just frosting our, you know.
Well, then how do you know? I mean, there's only like two VA hospitals in my state, okay? How do you know which ones are actually legit?
How do you know if you don't call and ask them?
Well, the VA hospital, if you call them,
they
will give you a list.
They will give you people that they've investigated,
yeah,
that are on their
okay
list, that are approved to be talked to.
Okay.
The only thing you should be leery of is they start asking you for money right off the bat.
Yeah.
That's the first clue that they're not legit.
Just hang up.
Okay.
And we got Marion on the phone.
Marion's on the phone.
Hello, Marion.
Hey, Phil, I can't believe I missed you in Vegas.
You missed everybody.
I saw Bill, so I guess I didn't miss the important people, did I?
Oh, here we go. This is probably one of the rare times we weren't together.
Were you at the Cashman Center this year?
Remember we saw you. I came up to you and gave you a big old hug. We hung out for a little bit. I asked you how your wife was.
We were saying that the only time Phil and I were not together was the Cashman Center. There was so many events going on that truly once we got there, Phil and I just said, we can't make them all. Let's split the stuff down the middle again with that. So I met a lot of our friends, and Phil being in a different physical location, he met a lot of friends up to him. May I tell everybody a little story, please?
Sure.
I didn't ask you. I asked all my friends. So there I am. I just got to Vegas, okay?
Notice nobody else answered that question except for Phil.
I just get to Vegas, and my wife, who just got out of the wheelchair on Tuesday, doctor, to go out to ride the bike. We rolled out to Vegas. She wanted to get some water because she's a real water person. She said, I'm going to go in this little store and get some, convenience store, get some water. I know my wife. She's going to look around shopping, so I don't care. I'm standing outside. You know where the story's going?
Go ahead.
Good, okay. While I'm sitting there, minding my own business,
sure,
one of the North County guys come up, hey, Bill, how you doing, blah, 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 good to see you, yeah, you know. Well, he says goodbye. About 5 minutes later, another guy comes up, Mr. Kennedy, oh, my God, I'm so happy to see you, and safe ride up and all that. And I went, yeah, man, things are good. I'm just waiting for the wife. I tell everybody the same story. And so he leaves, and I'm still waiting for my wife to come out of the convenience store, who she's only getting bottled water, but
correct,
that's all right. That's
correct.
All right. Then this girl comes up to me, and she wants to know if I want a date. So
no.
I look to the left, I look to the right, I look behind me, I look in front of me, and I figure that sneaky, sneaky Phil, he's got this girl hooked up somehow to pretend she wants to go on a date with me. And then there's no Phil.
What a front door.
And then I realized this is a professional.
Mm-hmm.
She don't know who I am. She don't even care. She just wanted to go on a date with me. So I explained to her that I thanked her very much because it certainly was a nice thing anybody said to me that day so far. But my wife is inside getting water and all that. So she talked to me for a few seconds, and she left. But I swear to you, when the girl came up and wanted to know, do I want to date, I thought that's Bill. Hide behind a pillar or hide behind a car. I don't know what he's doing. He set the whole thing up, but no, he was innocent. But I don't know. I guess it's your track record. That's why I blame you. You know?
Yeah, okay.
So that was the very start of it. We had so many. Everybody went to Vegas. I know everybody had a great time, except for when we all had to come home.
Yes, I agree. What was your ride like home?
108 degrees.
Yeah.
And I left on Sunday morning, and I got jacked up with those two or three accidents, and it took me a long time splitting traffic to get through it.
Uh-huh.
And then I got by the agricultural inspection station. That
uh-huh.
was backed up 2 miles. Up the middle off, I went flying. I finally got to the front, so I figured I better sneak back in line because I know the cops don't like me doing that. Cop looked at me and he waved me on, so I said, well, I'll just keep splitting traffic all the way. I got up the front, he said, don't even slow down, keep going, boy, keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciated that, but the heat.
Oh, it was miserable.
What day did you come back on?
We came back on Sunday afternoon. We had a friend that couldn't meet us until noon. We went to the Main Street for their Sunday champagne brunch. And we didn't leave until 2:30. We got on the road, got gas, got on the road, and then our fuel line broke.
Oh.
So we, literally just kind of coasted off this ramp that was kind of, in the middle of bum, you know, where.
Yeah.
And fortunately, Mike has all his tools. He's prepared because, you know, we're riding a 1998 FLHP, and, you know, he's been doing a lot of work on it. So fortunately, we got it going again, and just a little bit more, and it petered out. He had to pull over on the side, and I'm telling you, on that highway, in that heat, and I was not in a good mood. It took us 8 hours to get from Vegas to San Diego.
Well, the sun was...
It took me 4.5 hours to get to Mission and 15 and 76, which I pulled in to get gas, and who was sitting in the shade?
Philip and I split 330 miles later. He and I pulled to the exact same gas station.
Oh, my God.
He pulls up, he's looking right at me, he's, oh, my God, that's Bill. We drove separate and all that, and we exact same gas station. But that heat is coming down off the blacktop. And coming
mm-hmm.
back up, and they said 108 degrees
mm-hmm.
plus.
It just, it was draining me. I'm not a big Gatorade person, but I'm going to tell you, I drank 3 bottles. Every gas stop, I knocked a bottle down, and my wife was smart enough.
Whether you need to or not.
Yeah, and I don't even care for Gatorade. But my wife was smart enough to give me a salt pill,
yeah.
And that helped me a little bit too, but...
you have to be careful. It's easy to get dehydrated. I actually noticed something while I was in Vegas that I was kind of curious about. I noticed that the riders of, you know, mopeds, Vespas, scooters and such don't have to wear helmets.
Well, they got a law coming into effect there, and pretty soon they're going to have to do that. And they're also going to have to be licensed because Nevada is broke, if you can believe that, Bill.
Right.
They're looking... money from everywhere.
They have
to
wear.
If you get a small CC and all that, a certain CC size, you don't need a license or nothing. You just jump on the bike and go. So you got your helmet on right next to you. You got a little moped thing going down the road. You got no helmet, no nothing.
Right.
It's legal. It will change soon, though, unfortunately.
That's
I like the idea of them running around half crazy. It's a great idea. Yeah.
But, so, Miriam, you're your ride for cancer on the 21st? Am I correct? Okay.
You are right. Ride for Kids. San Diego Ride for Kids benefiting the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation. You guys know my son, David, who is a brain tumor survivor, still monitored for a giant cell astrocytoma, but he's now 22. He started battling with it when he was 6. So he's doing good, but we're still fighting the good fight, trying to find a cure and putting money away every city around the country. We got 41 cities around the country that do Ride for Kids, and I'm recruiting my escorts. male and female escorts. And what I mean by that is we look for people with sidecars especially, but we look for people to take a family member or a kid or a sibling of a survivor's family. I asked Bill, actually, if he was interested in, you know, what his answer was, of course.
What was his answer, just so everybody knows?
It's, I don't know my schedule. You have to call me. I have no idea where I'm going to be on October 21st. You have to call me. I don't keep my schedule.
Man, that's
Bill's got, Bill's had a full play for the last long time.
Yeah,
I got to look at everything.
He's got to look at everything, so he's not giving you a run around.
Oh, no. I know that. But
we've been at the campus out there almost every year. Is Edel still working with you guys out there on that
run?
Yeah,
she's still working with us. But she's kind of lessened her load. She's not on the task force anymore. We've got a bunch of new people on the task force this year, which is great. I got some San Diego Hog members now. I got some Spider Rider members. I got, you know, a couple people that ride, a couple people that don't ride. I mean, just everybody's carrying the load. So
Did we talk about American Legion riders this year?
And I just put in the chat room. I just put in there for the firstgiving.com. It's a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
So the link is in there for you.
Thank you.
We're going to let the American Legion riders know about this, too, because these guys, of course, you know.
They're coming.
Good, all right, then.
Yeah, they're the Oceanside chapter. They came last year. They're coming again this year. I love those guys. They're awesome.
Great.
I don't know if you know Brian. He used to be the president, Brian Nielsen. He's not the president any longer, but he took one of the moms last year. He was an escort, and she just loved his bike and said it was probably one of the most comfortable seats ever.
Now I remember exactly where I was when we met. Weren't you at Hogs and Heifers dancing up on the bar? We'll check that after the show. We'll keep that in the download.
You're
right.
Funny.
But just so everybody knows, I have the let me give a little background on what Miriam's talking about. But this is the Ride for Kids. It's the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation. And one of their main things is let's work together and make our goal of the San Diego Ride for Kids. Because every day, 11 more children in the United States are diagnosed with a brain tumor, the deadliest form of childhood cancer. You can help them out by joining the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation's Ride for Kids on Sunday, October 21st in Cardiff at Maricosta College, on San Alejo campus at 3333 Manchester Avenue in Cardiff, California.
And we are talking about San Diego for you people.
Right.
What the hell are you talking
about? If you go to the blog, you can get all the information, and there's links there on how to get there, the event newsletter. The registration is open at 8:30 and closes at 10:45. The escorted ride starts at 11 sharp. Who's escorting?
National Public Safety.
Okay.
It's a professional organization.
Right. They're good. We ask for a donation of just $35 per bike to ride, but we need more than that to help our stars. If you set a minimum fundraising goal of $300, we'll meet our goal for this year's ride. It's easy to collect $300. Just ask 10 of your coworkers, neighbors, family, and friends to donate $30 each. You can even set up a personal fundraising page to accept online donations, and I'll put that link in there for you right now.
Boom. There you go.
Yeah.
I remember when the first ride first started, it was like about 2 or 3 Harleys only. And I'm looking at myself, my few friends, and I'm thinking, these Honda riders, man, they got cool uniforms, cool hats. And I said right away, I have to tell you this. The biggest compliment I gave the Honda Goldwing riders, and we do that toy run every year at Oceanside Harbor, right? You're down there for that. Out to the casino? I got to tell you, I always go to Honda Goldwing Rise events. And I want to tell everybody why. These people eat well. They have food, and God Almighty, they're organized. They got lines and cones, and I'm going, wow. So I've been doing it for a long time, and you know it's going to be well organized, and you know you're going to get fed well. So, hey,
And I'll put in the other one that says for more information. It's got the links and the phone number. I'll pop that in the chat room also. We got, anything else besides meeting Bill over
at the Ogden Heifer? She was at.
Yeah,
Fremont Street, Saturday night.
The Ogden Heifer, you were on the counter dancing. I remember
right,
that.
Right, I was. And I did manage to keep my top on for a change.
Your story.
Yeah, it's your story. I thought I saw somebody sticking pasties, but there we go.
No, that was the blonde. I'm the brunette.
Okay. It was a brunette when I was there.
And people don't understand that in Nevada, Las Vegas, you can go topless if you have pasties. That's not against the law at all. So quite a few of the girls had pasties on.
Right.
Yeah.
I look, no.
Some of them should not be jumping rope either.
Oh, gosh. You see the girl on Fremont labeled the largest chest in the world? Did you see that one, that girl there?
Wasn't that the blonde with the pasties?
No, she was one dressed like a pirate wench or something like
that.
Oh,
no, I didn't. I missed her.
Each one of her...
Well, you were probably the only one on Fremont Street that missed her then.
Oh, God, that girl was... But, you know, hey, who am I to judge other people? I was breastfed as well. I'm all for that, you know.
Fremont Street is so funny. You know how, like, you can go and get all these fruity, frozen, alcoholic mixed drinks that are in those big growlers?
Right.
Well, we were out there Saturday night, and a friend of mine comes up, and he's like, got this chocolate milk-looking thing, and he's like, take a sip. Now, mind you, I really don't drink very much, and I only like the fruity, I can't taste the alcohol, but I get drunk type of drinks. And I took one sip of that, and it was like, pure vodka. I was like, what are you doing? Have a little alcohol with your chocolate there. It was supposed to be a mudslide. Everybody's walking around with those things. It was just fun. And we met the guy who won. Did you guys see when the guy who won the Harley?
No.
Yeah, I was on the other end.
Okay. We met this guy. He was actually from New Mexico who won the Golden Nuggets. It was three different Harleys that they could pick from, and he picked the brand new Road Glide. And then when we were coming back from Vendor Village on Sunday, he was on the shuttle bus with us, and it turned out that Kismet is so funny because his bike in New Mexico broke down like 3 days before, so he ended up driving with his wife to Vegas. And so now he was riding back from Vegas on his brand new bike that he just won. But I was like, okay, how many things do you have to sign off on and how much money do you have to have deducted before you can really take that bike home?
Well, first of all, let me just point out to you that if you...
Wasn't it you could win the bike for $30,000?
Yes. And if you live in California, you can't take the bike home.
No.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Cannot bring an out-of-state motorcycle in the state of California with less than 7,500 miles. And I've had a friend of mine did win one a couple years ago, and he got stuck in a bottleneck like you wouldn't believe. Another state where he had some family, get a driver's license, register in that state, and bring the bike back to California and re-register it again in California. But I tell everybody in California, please, if you're going to win something like that, just say, what's the cash buyout?
Right.
Much smarter, guys.
Wow.
I live in California. Too bad. So sad.
So wait, so like you have to get somebody to ride it around Nevada until they get 7,000 miles on before you can bring it home, or you just take the money?
Yes, you can take the money, or you can actually register. Just say you've got a family member in Nevada, just to pick a state out there. You can register it in the state of Nevada in your name under your family's address, okay? Then take it into California, and when you get stopped, say, here's my Nevada address, here's my California address. I go from state to state, and they'll put up with that. They both know it's bullshit, but you get away with it then. However, if you try to just take it from Nevada right into California DMV, and you say, I got this motorcycle, I won this motorcycle, I want to register it. And they go, no. And they listed. From that point on, that bike can never be registered. The VIN number, the motor number, can never be registered in the state of California.
And they don't tell you until after they got all your paperwork.
Well, you know, it's a
hand.
Different state. You know, Nevada doesn't know California laws.
No, what I'm saying is when you go to the DMV,
you turn in
all the paperwork.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why it's better to ask a question, get an answer before you show them anything.
Or just hang out with some gray-haired old guy. I'll help you out, little girl.
Well, I mean, it's a lot less to register your bike in Vegas than it is to pay for registration and that here in California. It's astronomical here in California.
That's correct.
And I just want to say this real quick. Fire Riders, as soon as we wrap up with Miriam, I'll bring you on and you can talk about your event. And Miriam, if you want to stay in on this, it's going to be a Biker's Ride for Cancer in Los Angeles, the 14th. So I'll let them talk about it, and when we bring them on, if you want to hang out for this.
Do we have any pictures of her dancing at the Hogs and Heifers that we can post? Or, no?
No.
Did you get any? All right.
Bill, you are just such the character sometimes, I'll tell you.
I try to make myself have a good time.
So one of the things that I noticed when I saw you in Vegas, that I don't think I was quite... Is your beard, like, exceptionally long, or is that usually as long as it is?
No, I have... My gosh, I've had let it grow about 2-3 inches longer than normal. What happened was, my rule of thumb was, only Bill Kennedy's rule of thumb, I need to grab my beard with my hand, close my fist, okay? Anything that hangs out beyond my little finger, I cut that off. And the reason being is, when I'm riding down the road in my old helmet, if it's anything longer than that, the wind blows it up and it whips me right below the eyes, irritates the hell out of me. Subsequently, I have gone to a full-face helmet. Therefore, I don't care because it doesn't affect me and all that. So you are correct. You're one of the few people to notice that I've got at least 2-3 inches, maybe a little longer, in my beard growing down now.
Wow.
Very good, little girl. Very good.
Yes, I am rather observant when I'm not dancing on bar tops.
Well,
it's your story. You tell it any way it sounds good.
Did you get down the Hogs and Heifers at all?
I did. It was so crazy loud in there, and it wasn't, I mean, it was okay. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Oh, I heard a beep. I had so much fun just being on Fremont in general. Did you guys see that Heart Attack Cafe?
No, I wasn't there.
Oh, my God.
I heard about it. I saw it, yes.
What were some of the weird things they had there?
One of the things is when you go in there, if you want to, if you weigh over 300 pounds, 300 pounds or more, you get to eat for free. And when you go in, they...
Calories or something crazy or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, you have to wear a hospital gown.
Huh?
And then they have... Jello shots, that are really, really good Jello shots, but they come in like a syringe. And it was just kind of gross, but funny at the same time.
When I was on Fremont, I was trying to go. I had like a plan. Philip has a plan. However, we sometimes deviate. And that's one that I got so close to going in there, but somebody called me over, da 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 da. Bill, a bike show, a topless contest, a bikini contest, and I just didn't make it there. But that would be interesting. May I ask, where did you stay that weekend?
We stayed at the California.
I stayed at the club called The D.
Fitzgerald.
I stayed at the Fitzgerald for many, many, many years. I like to favor Irish things. But it's now called The D.
Uh-huh.
And it's all brand new, but I just didn't feel the ambiance. I wasn't that happy with it. So next year, anybody that looks for me, because usually you do find me in the Fitzgerald, now called The D, I won't be there. I don't know where I'm going to be, but I didn't feel it, boys and girls. However, my wife won more money than she lost, so I can't complain about that.
There you go.
How was your hotel? Was it acceptable?
It was
everything
nice.
Good to go?
But there's just like little things that we notice, like, for example, there's no little coffee maker in our room.
Let's go, my wife. The Fitzgerald always had a coffee maker. And the Fitzgerald,
right.
if you didn't, they always had room service, so I'd get my wife
a craft
of coffee.
They don't have that anymore. Yeah, they wanted $12 for a box.
They wanted $2.50. We went down to the bar, and they wanted $2.50 for one of those little styrofoam cups with coffee.
$10. $10 and $7 for $7 for a bottle of water, Bill.
That's what my wife went out to get one fine bottle of water.
That was at the Golden Nugget.
Oh, okay.
Did you ride your bike
any
times in the weekend, or did you take advantage of the shuttle to the Cashman Center?
We went up to Mount Charleston. Have you ever been up there?
No. Friends of mine said that they like to leave Vegas, people who live in Vegas, and they go up to Mount Charleston. They said to get away from all of us California people. They don't want to be in Vegas when we're all there. So they were telling me about that, and I hadn't heard about that before.
It was beautiful. It's like you don't even realize that you're that close to it's like a 90-mile ride round trip. But you go up there and it's cool, and they have a lodge and a resort and, you know, big trees and beautiful rock. I mean, usually what we do is we'll, one year we did Red Rock, one year we did Valley of Fire, so this year we wanted to do Mount Charleston.
Did you go to the dam this year at all?
No, I would like to do that, though, one time, too.
We skipped the dam this year because we were at the dam last year. It always is just overwhelming. That's impressive.
And me being the social butterfly, I attended all the clubhouses I was supposed to go to.
And we do want to give a special thanks to new friends of ours.
The Iron Crossman.
Iron Crossman, who were nice enough to invite us to their house, which is a freaking warehouse. I'm not talking about a little motorcycle clubhouse, a warehouse.
Nice.
Oh, my God. It was big. It was huge.
With comfortable chairs. A nice bar, laid out. It looks like walking into a...
Yeah, let me back it up here. You walk in there, first of all, and there's a big bar, right?
Right.
And then you go into the second room, and it's a theater room.
There's a big bar. There's full-screen TVs.
That's the second room.
Tables and chairs. No, that's the first room. You go through the doorway, and then there's the big-screen TV.
The bigger one, yeah. And outside, they get...
And all the
seating
like
Oh, my God. It was simply amazing. I never seen a club this well-organized and all that. Now, let me tell you about my karma. We left, and my wife and I, we met a couple of friends of ours in this motorcycle club that rode their cars and trucks over to Vegas, and I'm not going to say who they are on the air, but I swear to God I'm tempted to say it. But I'm not going to say it, but I really want to say it.
No, but we also had some problems with the no colors policy. It seems that Flatfoots, that's the name of the club,
mm-hmm.
which is... cops were allowed to walk around with their shit on, and nobody bothered them.
I saw a lot of Mongols walking up and down.
I was just going to say that.
I saw a lot of the clubs, in fact, there was a couple casinos that you could spend the night, you could book a room and wear your colors in there.
Right.
So I saw that was going on.
And one friend of ours in particular went to the Flamingo
uh-huh.
and was escorted out.
Yeah,
they were a fireman club.
You know, you and I left Saturday night or so, whatever. You went over to Hogs and Heifers.
Right.
And about midnight or something like that, the wife and I, we left the Iron Crossman Motorcycle Clubhouse. And it was such a beautiful night. It was starting to cool off. I figured, let's go back into downtown Vegas, but let's go east of Vegas. I don't know, 50, 100 miles. I don't know how far I was going to go. My wife and I got 2-3 miles outside of Vegas. It started raining on me.
Mm-hmm.
So we pulled off the first intersection. My wife says, what are you doing? I said, well, obviously God doesn't want me to go any further in this direction. So we whipped the Huey, and as soon as I went back to Vegas, stopped raining. So, crazy story, but what the heck. I couldn't believe it, all that stinking heat. It's raining on me. This is good.
That would have felt good. I would have liked that.
Last year it poured on us outside Hogs and Heifers. We were like a half a block away from it, and it poured. About 15 minutes, and the streets were, it was fantastic. Everybody's out there getting soaked and having a good time, and we dried up almost immediately with them.
They even had a couple winners of the wet t-shirt contest that night, didn't we?
Yeah, I want to say at the Cashman Center, there was a wonderful collection of young women who decided to display their assets, and I want to thank them for that. There was a couple of nice clubs that had a lot of women competing. But for the women now, we had the strongest biker contest. You had guys taking...
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, some big boys there, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, definitely very impressive. I was impressed with that.
I was going to enter it, but, you know, they didn't have any bicycle tires for me to throw. The other guys are throwing semi-truck tires, and at 63 years of age, I thought I should be able to throw a bicycle tire. They said, no, you got to throw a truck, and I didn't want to show off, you know.
God bless you. They could have made accommodations for you. Come on, what's up with that?
Well, at the Cashman Center, they had the ring. You didn't make the Cashman Center, Phil.
No, I didn't.
They had a ring where they had boxing and Muay Thai fighting down there. And they said, God, Bill, love to have you come in and do a few rounds. And I said, well, you know, that sounds pretty good. Again, I am 63 years old. Give me a 63-year-old guy so I can fight. Instead of a 63-year-old guy to fight, I figured I got to be – I'm in pretty damn good shape, guys. I could beat a 63-year-old guy up. They said, no, we couldn't find anybody. And I said, well, is there any women under 13 that want to fight me?
Oh, my God.
And they couldn't find any women under 13, so I didn't fight anybody that night. But I gave a chance. I gave, you know, anybody over 63, any woman under 13, I'd fight them. But wasn't meant to be. Wasn't meant to be.
Well, I would have fought you, and I'm only 51, so.
Oh, well, do you have an uppercut or, you know, I don't want to get hurt.
No, I would have just wrestled more than boxing.
Like,
wrestling would have been more my speed.
I'd be doing the, you'd be chasing me around.
Well, you know,
the
Bill, that one fight you did win, it's only because that girl was drunk.
If you don't know, I have fought in 100 fights. I've lost 99 of them. The one win, which is to my credit, well, that person keeps demanding a rematch. But as Philip said, it's not my fault. She showed up drunk. So no rematch. I win.
Let's go to 818, Phil.
818, talk to us a little bit. What's on the air? What's on your mind tonight?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon. I love that deep voice there. Yeah.
This is President 5150 from Pirate Riders out here in Los Angeles.
Good.
I,
how are you?
I'm doing good. I know you gave me a number of shows that I could call back before our event, but I had minor surgery, so I was down for a week, and just starting to get around to you know being able to socialize and speak a little bit. I wanted to touch base on this important event because, obviously, with regards to anything that goes on with any event, the end of the day, it's all about the charity. And that's the reason I work so hard for it because, and I'm sure at the age of some of the people that I've been listening to for the past 15 minutes, we all know somebody who has passed away from cancer or somebody who's going through it. Or somebody who's in remission. So our fight continues. And if you have just a couple of moments, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the event.
Go to the air, brother.
Sunday, October 14th, beginning at Glendale Harley-Davidson, we have a registration period from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., where all we do is ask you for 10 measly dollars that goes to charity. We have some Sons of Anarchy stars. We have a DJ at the dealership. We're going to have some fun there for a couple of hours, mingle and match and scratch the back of the dealer by bringing people through their dealership for their generosity of letting us stomp all over their dealer and providing us with raffle prizes, gift cards, refreshments, and the such. And then we kick stands up at 11 o'clock for Los Angeles Harley of Anaheim. At their new location, we'll be there about 12 noon, where we'll pick up more registrants and bring a whole list of people with us on this ride from 12 noon until 2:30 in the afternoon. And we have two DJs at that location, one out in the parking lot and one upstairs on the third floor in the motor clothes department. And again, we'll have refreshments, a taco truck, you know, music, entertainment. And some more personalities from television, and another registration period to raise more funds, obviously, to continue the ride. And then we kick stands up at 2:30 with the Freedom All Ladies Ride. This is where we put the ladies wearing pink because of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, at the front of the ride. Uh-huh. And we lead them to Magic Wheels Clubhouse of Los Angeles, which is a large tilt-up warehouse building. It's a magnificent clubhouse with a magnificent motorcycle club also co-presenting this event. And there we have a main event with a stage, yet another DJ. We have three comedians, some more personalities, three actors from the Sons of Anarchy, vendors, food trucks, a custom bike show. If you already purchased your wristband on the motorcycle ride at the dealerships, you can roll right into the clubhouse. If you didn't, we're selling more wristbands at $10 a head to get into the clubhouse if you're a ride-in that didn't catch the ride or you're a walk-in. And all bikers, all cultures, patch wearers, no patch wearers, people in cages, their family, friends are all welcome to come out. Help us celebrate life and fight cancer to benefit, like I said, at the end of the day, the two charities that we're sponsoring, both nonprofit organizations supporting cancer patients while they're going through, obviously, chemotherapy and this terrible disease.
Uh-huh. Didn't this start when you guys helped that one lady and then you were going to help her again and she said, well, let's do this for other people too?
Yes, you have a great memory. Granny, she's a female writer herself. She's up in her age, I believe, 60 years old. She rides a Harley with apes, and she can no longer ride her Harley currently because she has a reoccurring bout of cancer. She'll be at the event, but she'll have to be driven. But it all started 4 years ago when some friends of hers in the set, mostly female riders, got together just to pull some cash together and fill her refrigerator and pay some utility bills while she was going through her first bout of breast cancer.
Uh-huh.
And once she was in remission, she wanted this thing to go on because while she was going through cancer, she was introduced and met the supporting organizations who will actually go to your home and pick you up and take you to your chemotherapy if your family members are taking care of their own family or unavailable. They'll fill your refrigerator with food, they'll pay your utility bills, and they'll stay with you at home until you're comfortable and you go to sleep. It's a support organization that she was passionate about, and when we met them, the decision was easy for us to follow suit and support that organization. So every year we support that organization, and then we rotate to another organization as our second benefactor. And this will be our fourth year of doing this, third legitimate year, supporting the 501c3 nonprofit cancer supporting groups.
Okay. I got a question on who from the Suns is going to be there?
We got Emilio Rivera, who is Marcus Alvarez, the president of the Mayans Motorcycle Club.
Right.
We have a reoccurring actress who's been on 22 episodes. Her name is Ima. She plays the porn star, who actually was in episode 2 of this year.
Right.
And we have Amin Joseph, who is a new cast member who's going to be a reoccurring actor because of the way the story is twisting.
Okay.
And then we have three comedians, and Matt Birch and Froy Tessero from the Operation Repo show, who both ride motorcycles. Emilio also rides a custom motorcycle, soft tail with apes. So they're
right.
Actually going to be riding in the ride with us.
Cool.
And then we are hoping to get, this week we'll find out with schedule changes, Malcolm Jamal Warner, who has his own television show, Read Between the Lines, who used to be on The Cosby Show, he also rides his own custom Harley.
Mm-hmm.
So,
know all those guys very well.
Yes, so we're drawing some good attention to the event. You know, we advertise this event, you know, mostly in the Harley sector. We are motorcycle clubs, so we also, you know, we don't discriminate against clubs. We don't care which club you are. But we go further by going to the sport bike clubs, the vintage clubs, the bobber clubs. You know, what we've learned about this when we started with Granny is it was a breast cancer ride.
Mm-hmm.
The first year it was called Granny Breast Cancer Survivor Ride and Main Event. it was a long name, but a lot of the people that wanted to come on board as sponsors and supporters and volunteers were telling us stories about their uncle, their mother, their sister, and it wasn't about breast cancer anymore. It was about colon cancer, prostate cancer, liver cancer, skin cancer. So Granny and I got together with some of the committee members, and we had a discussion which led to the name change, Bikers Ride for Cancer Los Angeles, because, I mean, in a nutshell, it is much bigger than us. And the more time we spend on the bench or saying that we're going to do something about it, the less people we have fighting this cause. And we need more people on the fighting side to help the people in support groups to make these people feel comfortable while they're going through these treatments. Because there's no way a small organization as ours, and I'm not saying that we're no amount is small, but such groups as the City of Hope, they're getting some large support from, you know, foundations and rich and famous people, you know, people like Bill Gates. Support groups are kind of not looking for a cure, but they're there on the same fighting team helping these patients while they're going through their treatments. And I can see the people that I know that have cancer and what they're going through, and sometimes some of the illness and the deteriorating state when you're going through chemotherapy. Other than that, I'm not a doctor or scientist, so I don't know much about it, but going through chemotherapy is such a poison to the human body that, you know, we have to find a cure, and we have to comfort these people who are people we know in our family, people that we, you know on the motorcycle community, our neighbors, our coworkers, or like for many people that might come to this event who don't know Granny, just an acquaintance that they're going to meet. She's a wonderful woman with a spirit that it goes beyond her strength, and her spirit goes beyond most grown men that I've known. And she continues the fight. When she had this reoccurring bout of cancer, she had her pity party, and then she woke up and says it's time to get back up and fight. Kind of like an injured player that wants to go back and help his team get to the goal, you know, to the end zone. And it's kind of like when a soldier comes home from a tour and he'd rather be back, you know, in Afghanistan with his troops than at home because he feels he's not supporting his you know, battalion. And that's her spirit right now, and we support that. So that's why we continue the work and continue the fight and continue the support.
I want to tell you that we have a friend of cancer. He's the cancer's taking the nose off his face, so he has his big piece of gauze and bandaged up there. And his sister has to drive him down to my bike shop now. Once a week, he stays for about an hour or so. That's his really only touch with the world out there. So he said to me, "I want everybody to call me Fred No Nose." He said, "I don't want to hide. I don't want anybody to think I'm ashamed of this. This is a disease. It's cancer. It's taken my nose off my face." So he comes in once a week, and he hangs out at the shop, and he gets a lot of strange looks, but you know what? He's telling everybody, "You want to know what the problem is? It's cancer." That's how he's dealing with it. So I think people are willing to stand up and say, "Hey, I'm not ashamed of what it is. What can I do to defeat it?" So what you guys are doing is extraordinary. We appreciate that.
Yeah, and I appreciate your ability to allow us on here to speak about it and reach the masses. I know some of your viewers, like a couple of weeks ago in Canada, he has since communicated me a couple of times and calls me brother, and I've never seen him from day one. And, you know, that's how I am. I'm a writer. I've been writing for 39 years. I've been patched for about 10. And I spend a lot of my time around motorcycle events, shows, and charity events when I'm not riding a motorcycle.
I met you at a new magazine opening.
That is correct. And
the magazine was that film?
Wrench Magazine.
The Wrench Magazine.
It was South Bay Customs hosting the Wrench Magazine launch.
That's correct.
And that was, you know, I know I didn't spend a lot of time there, but, you know, that's what I like to do is go outside of, I don't know, the norm of where I usually sit to meet other bikers, other communities. And, you know, that guy, I guess, you know, I'm riding a Road Glide and I have a sport bike in the garage. but I like to meet these guys that are on bobbers and choppers, and I like to occasionally meet. I went down to Venice Beach a couple of weeks ago for the Venice Vintage Motorcycle Rally, and we did a historical recreation of a picture that was done in 1910. Well, we recreated that, and then we took a ride up to Pepperdine, and I don't remember how many flags were on the lawn at Pepperdine, but it was representative of 9/11, so there had to be three or four thousand flags up there from all the people we lost in the entire 9/11 event. And they all took a photo opportunity there and then came back and had their rally down in Venice Beach. And to see all of these motorcycles that you think don't even exist anymore, people are riding them, they're rebuilt, they're looking just like the day they came off, you know, the showroom floor in BMW or Honda or Ducati or Harley or wherever. I saw, you know, hundreds of these motorcycles, and, you know, it was just a treat to be in that other cultural realm of the motorcycle community. And, you know, I do welcome everybody to come out to our event. You know, we don't discriminate. The Magic Wheels Motorcycle Club are a top-rate club. They're great guys. The Mystic Wheels Social Club will be working the gate. They're very kind women that work very hard for a cause. We actually have like 9 social clubs attached to this doing all of the volunteer work and registrations. We have several motorcycle clubs who are actual direct paying sponsors of this event, several companies. Like I said, all of the stars are providing their time gratis to us out of the goodness of their hearts. And all of the DJs are providing all of their time free at no charge. So, you know, I don't know if down the road this event turns corners and things start costing more money, but right now we're gifted and blessed that these people are coming forward to help us get this event to a different status. And, you know, it's often said and advertised that the Love Ride is the longest running charity in the entire country. And it all started with Oliver in a bar with 50 of his friends, and it grew to what it is to this very day. So who knows where Miriam's event is going to lead, and who knows where this Bikers Ride for Cancer is going to lead, and the other smaller organizations that are trying to make a difference in their community. You never know until you just keep putting your effort to it.
Well, I think the secret to your organization is whether or not you have a tight-knit core of people that are going to act as volunteers. That's going to be the gist of everything in there. You got a good idea of the concept now. Can you, you know, if you could tell yourself, the volunteers we got, if they're good people, if they're willing to give the time, your event will be successful almost in spite of yourself. So take the time to thank all your volunteers, because that will be whether or not you make it or break it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, actually, that's good advice. And one of the things that I do, because I do the ride myself, even though I'm the one running around with my head cut off trying to figure out everything and get it together, the volunteers are great. Last year we had a poker run. And the poker run, of course, has 5 stops, and one of our stops was in the Los Angeles County Park. Because it was just a poker stamp, and then you get on your bike and keep going, it wasn't any place where we were hanging out, per se. We had a table set up there, and we had a couple of reputable motorcycle-attached members there that people know to kind of greet them. The sheriffs rolled up 15 vehicles deep and told us we couldn't be there because we didn't have a permit. One of the stars that was riding on my motorcycle from the Sons of Anarchy, she got off and ran up there and started to chew the sheriff out. He started to get a little twisted and was ready to take us to jail because we were interfering with the officer's duty. Well, long story short, you know, my question to him was, and maybe I was out of line, but I thought because there was really nothing going on in the park for that period of time, which would have been a half hour for us to all get our stamps coming through, I asked him if he knew anybody in his family or in his life that was dying with cancer or has cancer, and he said yes, and I said, shame on you. We all got on our bikes. The volunteers that were at that post said, don't worry, Rick, we'll take this particular stamp station to L.A. Harley, and we'll just have 2 stations at 1 location. So we overcame and improvised and sought a solution. The girls, you know, put their heads together. And we called ahead to L.A. Harley and said, set up another table because we're bringing some more people to you. And they immediately jumped on it, and it was successful. Nobody can stop us. And,
I want to tell you something. We did an event down there recently for the paralyzed veterans of the VA hospital in San Diego.
Oh, yeah.
We had a couple hours left to go in the event, and I'm on stage, yada, yada. Cops raid us.
Sergeant.
We've been sitting here, music's going, everything is good to go. And he said, I got to shut the event down and all that. So I said,
Bill, you were talking, yeah. And I was standing about 30 people back, and I was pointing to your right.
That's what it is.
And you were going, huh?
What the hell are you doing?
Said, turn to your right. And there was a sergeant standing there, so Bill called him up and gave him the mic and said, I'll be right back in 10 minutes. And the mic didn't know what to do, so Bill came back, and that's when he told him, we might have to shut you down. And Bill said, well, we're winding down anyway. So the guy said, all right, I'm going to go on the other end of town for 2 or 3 hours, and then I'll be back.
He said, how much more time will you be? And I said, well, it's like 2 o'clock. 4 o'clock, we'll be out of here. He said, well, I like what you guys are doing, and I have to come out and answer this call. So I'm telling you right now, you have to shut this down. You sure we'll be out here by 4 o'clock? Okay, I'll be here after 4 o'clock to check on you guys again. You guys are a bunch of good old boys. But the point is that he was so, came in hard-ass, and you got to defuse the situation. You got to make these guys realize, get that valve in your chest. Let that air out. You're police officers. You're there to do a job, that's fine. We're doing a job. We're raising money for this charity event. This case was paralyzed vets. But I find it, we try to meet with the police department when we do stuff at my shop, Kennedy's Customer Cycles. Police department, the fire department, even with the bus company, I have all these people knowing in advance what's going on. I have the city buses rerouted for one day. If it gets out of control, like 500 or more, I request them that they can send a senior sergeant, don't get me so young, guy. A senior sergeant to cruise through my parking lot and all that.
Because when the young guys show up,
they get attitude.
They want to know who's got the permits, and Bill points to the mayor, and they go, "Well, that's the mayor," and it's, "Well, he's got the permits."
Every event in my shop, we have the mayor there.
You guys have a nice day.
I have the mayor doing speaking always, so the cops always back off. But I always try to get a senior cop in there. He drives through, hits the horn, beeps, waves at everybody. Everybody have a good time. All we're doing is reminding everybody, have a good time, don't get stupid. But I found out that once I get the cops, the fire department, the bus system, everybody involved in it, I get these people off my back. That's something you're going to have to work up in that area. It's to where the point where you're doing something and they're going to just totally, totally let you do what you want to do. It took me years to get this. This didn't happen overnight. But that's how we do it down here. We let them know what we're doing. We have meetings with them. Philip and I go down to the police station and meet. So we do an event, they're well aware of it. Maybe they'll help you up there, perhaps.
Can I interrupt here? I actually have questions because you guys are getting my wheels are spinning over here. First of all, being here in San Diego, I, too, have tried reaching out to celebrities in Los Angeles, and I have had absolutely no success with that whatsoever. I'm not really sure what the best
route is.
It's too far away. We're 2 hours. What's the problem?
I know. I'm telling you for a fact that the TV stars, movie stars that Phil and I know, they'll come by for an event for 15, 20 minutes and half an hour, and they got other things on their mind. For them to come down to San Diego, we've had a couple of them come down. It's a whole day.
Right.
And many of them are doing 2 or 3 things in a day. They can't give a whole day up for charity. I know they wish they could do more.
I mean, I personally know some of the guys from the Suns right now
that
have to be at 2 events on the 14th, and they're trying to figure it out. I'm not going to tell you who.
We've always had difficulty having people come down to San Diego. I live in Oceanside, which is like the furthest northest point in San Diego. I get them down occasionally. But I say, come on down to San Diego. Oh, geez, Bill, you know, that's a whole day and da-da-da-da, and they got to get a hotel room and all that. So being up in L.A., it's just closer to their territory.
Right.
And they're more willing to jump in.
Well, the key that I found, Bill, is if the charity will get them a room, they'll come down the day before. If their schedule permits, they'll spend the night, and they'll hobnob all day for you. But you gotta give a little to get a little.
It's just like I said, it's a geographical location. It's very difficult. L.A. people, Orange County people, they just think of San Diego, where's the redheaded stepchild? They think we're okay people. We're just not part of the party social scene, I'm afraid.
I go to L.A. all the time. My family lives on the west side of Los Angeles, and I'm always there. If you look at my Facebook page, you'll see I'm constantly going to Los Angeles. I'm going tomorrow, and then on Saturday we're going to Vegas for a family trip because my 85-year-old mother is visiting, and it's a two-hour ride. I live in Poway. My front door to my sister's front door off of La Cienega and between La Cienega and Robertson, 2 hours. It's crazy.
No. Is that LA?
Yeah.
Is that in a...
Hello?
Yeah. I said, Miriam, is that in a car?
Yeah.
Or on a bike?
No, that's...
In the... Oh, in the car.
Yeah,
okay.
And I if I have my son with me, I'm in the carpool lane. You know, I have to be a little aggressive with my driving because there's a bunch of really bad drivers out there. But 2 hours, and you know, David, my son David, is a participant in a clinical study at UCLA at the medical center, and this was the other thing that I was wanting to mention in regards to the fundraising and the cancer and everything, is that it's really important for people dealing with cancer to understand that if there are any clinical trials available that they can participate in, it's well worth not only their time in hopes of feeling better and maybe adding some time to their, you know, battle, they can hopefully add some more time onto their survival. But it's also so important in terms of finding the cure, because as the cancer person, you know, the patient is participating, they are gathering all this data. You know, like my son David, he has a brain tumor. And the trial that he's in, they, you know, are working towards shrinking the tumor. Specifically, they are working at shrinking the brain tumor. Well, now, because of the data and the results that they're gathering, they're finding that it's also applicable to treat people with renal cell carcinoma, people with kidney cancer. And they're also finding that it can be used for people that are getting transplants and are, you know, resisting the transplant. So I really, you know, I commend what you're doing for the cancer research and for the people that are dealing with it. And my heart goes out to them because I know, and for me, you know, with dealing with the kids, it's just, I mean, I don't care if you're 3 years old or 60 years old and you're dealing with the chemo and the radiation and you're getting sick, it's heartbreaking. My big thing is that, you know, I see the patient families at the ride, and I've had, you know, kids that were there last year that I won't see again. And so that's why, to me, their research is so, so vital. Because that's
Barry,
the only way that
something?
We'll get
you know,
it
you're saying about you having a hard time with celebrities. You do have baseball stars, football stars. We do have the San Diego Padres. You do have the San Diego Chargers.
Right.
Correct.
These are organizations you can contact.
Eric Weddle's doing a fundraiser for a kid Sunday with cancer.
These are organizations that can say, hey, we could use the positive publicity. Now, let's also talk about the fact San Diego's got, and I apologize, I don't know who the people, we have a soccer team in San Diego, right?
Right.
I don't know who they are. The Galaxy? No.
No.
Anyway, professional soccer team. You know, if I don't even
the
know
soccers,
their names.
The Sockers. San Diego Sockers, S-O-C-K-E-R-S.
Okay, then they are desperate for publicity. I don't even know who the hell they are. Let's also look at the next bit of celebrities you can always get a hold of. You have congressmen, you have senators, you have mayors in your area that would love to come down and shake hands and schmooze. My
you
only question is, don't let anybody show up who's running for office.
Nope.
And my theory is that I would not want to give somebody a free publicity without bringing his opponent in. So if you're mayor and you're not going to be reelected for another year or something like that, you're fair game to me. I only don't bring people running for election because I don't need to hear campaign speeches.
Right.
So these
well,
are
I
all
contacted, I have done that. I actually contacted Nathan Fletcher, who we know is no longer in the running. I have reached out to Chargers, and, you know, I just, you know, I have a couple local television news 10 people that have agreed. One of them is going to actually ride with us as a passenger. I think I'm going to end up putting him in a sidecar, but I just, you know, to me, I'm just thinking about the kids and how cool would it be for
the
kids
San Diego,
to meet somebody.
Do you know the Padres or the Chargers? You know how much paraphernalia they could kick in?
Oh, I know.
So go down to the headquarters, knock on the door, say, hey, let me in. I got something to talk to you about. It's positive publicity for you. It's positive publicity for them.
All right, Bill.
That would be the decision to get you in all that, girl.
All right, Bill, I'm taking you with me, man.
That's my job. I got the long gray hair. We'll get you by.
There you go. And then I had another question about something else that you guys were talking about. The Los Angeles ride is, they do it in Torrance. It's in May. And they usually have the support of the Torrance Police Department. The ride for kids isn't a poker run. It's like a 90-minute loop ride where they take the kids, come back, do a celebration of life, so on and so forth. So they need the cooperation of the different city police departments, municipalities that they go through in order to help, like, hold lights and those kinds of things. And this past May, the Los Angeles ride lost the support of the police departments that the ride goes through.
Well, basically,
I can answer that.
Go ahead.
I have a lot of experience with submitting requests and going to city council meetings and meeting in chambers at police authorities trying to obtain escorts or signal holds or whatever else you want to call it, the motorcade protection.
Mm-hmm.
And more agencies are distancing themselves from people on motorcycles who wear patches. So if your event draws people on the patch, that's what they're distancing themselves with. And case in point, I used to do this Christmas toy run, which became very popular, and a couple of the clubs had MySpace and Facebooks, and on the cover of their MySpace and Facebook, it showed their members with hand signs, I guess what the police indicated to them was gang signs, and what they were basically doing was doing hand signs of the first letter of their club name. And the Highway Patrol called us back and said that they changed their mind, they weren't going to associate with anybody. And I had to go back to these clubs and see what they were talking about, because I really don't visit other motorcycle clubs' websites very often, so I didn't know. And I'm not trying to belittle anyone or disrespect anyone with my comment, but these were grown men throwing hand signs about, you know, whatever it is they're trying to do, and all
yeah.
I did was basically take away from a greater thing that we were trying to do.
Right.
And they volunteered to participate in it. So that became a topic of discussion in the association meeting, which, you know, had a lot of shouting and cussing going on in that meeting. And basically I just put my hands up and said, well, we're riding, and we're not riding with any escort, so if somebody gets pulled over, you got to be a man and take the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did one of the rides, we were on PCH, and a Santa Monica motor cop came up and said, the funniest thing in the world, you guys aren't wearing the proper uniform, so you can't hold intersections. I almost laughed in his face, because I'm not even an authority, and I guess that means I could go down to the sergeant surplus by some sort of a uniform.
Right.
And we can go out there and do what we want in his eye, but then as soon as I roll through Burbank or LAPD or San Fernando City or Culver City, they're going to have a different outlook. I can guarantee you we will never be able to take a ride through Culver City, and they will never support us with escort service. They just won't.
Huh.
And you know, I'm born and raised in Culver City, so I know exactly how the police department is there, and they distance themselves dramatically from this type of activity.
My niece and my nephew both live in Culver City.
And I'm currently living in Burbank, and I do appreciate that the police department here is kind of like a little organized crime division of their own, but it's one of the holdouts of one of the safest cities, and we're surrounded on all four sides by the L.A. City. So I feel I'm safe in this city, but I try to stay away from the police as much as possible because they just have attitudes and they don't want to support us on the motorcycle thing. So I go to L.A. City where the police are so busy they don't have time for the little stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it supports us just fine because they're really busy going over and taking care of much bigger problems than us.
Right.
It's a vast city with a shortage of manpower and a very serious crime situation. So I think a couple of guys going through an intersection or a couple of hundred for a good cause is the least of their worries.
Have you had to coordinate any type of services with the police department in Torrance?
No, I have never gone through Torrance or dealt with them, nor do I go to that region, but we decide to take care of our own rides, and we have volunteer clubs that do the road captain services for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in our third year of legitimacy, fourth year with the event, and we use the exact same people every time, and we haven't had one single problem, and nobody bothers us. And we've gone through intersections with sheriffs parked at the red light waiting for us to get out of the way so they can go on with their life, and they never...
Mm-hmm.
ever pulled out on us or said we couldn't do that. Not once.
Yeah, we're fortunate here in San Diego because we use National Public Safety and they have relationships with, you know, Encinitas or Oceanside, you know, the various Carlsbad because we go up the coast.
You should explain, that's a private organization so he can understand what you're talking about, okay?
Right. National Public Safety is a private company. But they have the relationships with those different municipalities, which helps us. So fortunately here, and they donate their time to us as a charity. But LA is huge. They probably have over 1,000 bikes at Ride for Kids in Los Angeles. So it was a real cluster when they lost the police support.
Well, the fortunate thing about our ride, and it's fortunate, it could be a little boring, but, hey, we're doing this for a charity, so we're not trying to go to the canyons or see the beach. We're trying to do the charity, is we're riding mostly freeways, and we have very few signals between the dealerships, the clubhouse, and the freeway. So our actual, you know, L.A. Harley is right off the 91 and the 5. Glendale's
mm-hmm.
about six blocks from the 5 and the 2 freeway. And maybe a mile from the 134. And then the Magic Wheels Clubhouse is probably about four to six blocks off the 110 and the 105 freeway. So we really are fortunate this year because of the way we did our ride. We're not going to be dealing with a lot of red lights or traffic.
Mm-hmm, the route.
Or keeping people from going to their destination. And we make strict codes about emergency vehicles in code 3 to stop and let the ambulances, fire trucks, and police through. And, you know, we have very strict guidelines that everybody stays in by twos and let the road captains do the job. And we tell them on the microphone, if you have some ill-fated reason why you want to burn rubber, stunt, pop a wheelie, or do some stupid stuff, go ahead right now and do whatever it is you got to do.
Get it out of your system.
No, we'll see you at the end of the ride. We don't want you as a part of this ride.
Yeah, we've had to do that.
Yeah,
we have, because of the sidecars, we had one guy that we had a real big problem with because he was flying the wing on a sidecar with one of our kids in it.
Wow.
And that story about him doing that ended up making it like around the country, and it became a huge issue to the point of now when we establish an escort, we have to like go through this whole thing of all the different rules, and they have to sign off on stuff, and you know, it's become a legal liability issue when they're doing that.
Oh, absolutely. Our volunteers at the dealership level are instructed and re-instructed, and then when we get to the dealer the day of, I personally go up to them with the station supervisor and re-instruct them, just in case Betty didn't make the first two meetings and showed up the day of because she got the day off of work. We make sure everybody's on the same page. You take the $10 out of that rider and passenger's hand, so that's $20 if you got two people on a bike, and you slide that waiver across the table, and you don't give them a wristband until that waiver comes back properly filled out.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I've been to events where they get the money, they give you the wristband, and the waiver's sitting there kind of being tossed around the table, and sometimes it gets filled out, and sometimes it doesn't.
Right. Do you guys have, like, AMA sanctioning any of the event for...
Well, I don't even want to put this on Phil and Bill, so I'll say it myself. In the patched world, there are people that are members of the AMA, and there are people that are staunchly against them because of an article that was written decades ago. So,
okay.
Yeah, if you're maybe a sport bike club or a street bike club or something like that, maybe the AMA is a sanctioned event. But, you know, I'm not opposed to the AMA. I'm a member myself.
Right.
But I do it to fight for some of my rights. I'm not really concerned about an article that was done back in the days when some event happened in Hollister or wherever it was. I'm not really that concerned because we're living in 2012, about to touch 2013. And, you know, I know what I'm going to do for my rights. I step anywhere I want in this country because it's a free country. And the soldiers that died to bring me this freedom
right.
and support that and keep it alive, more importantly, to keep that freedom alive, is what I live for every day. And if the bike fest don't allow me to go, and I hate to touch back on a subject you already crossed, but if the bike fest doesn't allow me to go in with my patch, I have to make a decision if I really wanted to go to the bike fest and support a non-patch environment, no colors, no cut or whatever, or keep it pushing. And, you know, so far I keep it pushing because I'm a patch wearer, and I have two chapters, one here in Reykjavik, Iceland.
Oh, wow.
And I don't want any of my members to be at the Cook's Corner or the Rock Store or Neptune's Net or at the Booze Fighters event, you know, in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody comes up and says, aren't you in bed with this policy? And you had a show there or you supported something or you were a sponsor and give my people heck because they think that we're in bed with the policy when it's clearly not the truth. When the LA Calendar Motorcycle
that's
show
the problem, though. I just feel like there's just too much stereotyping. There's so
politics fucks it up every time.
So many different chapters, clubs. I mean, even the Hog chapters wear a patch.
Everybody's points are valid, but you have to understand that there's also a few that ruin it for the masses.
Right, right.
Okay, it's not only about somebody... You know, at the LA Calendar Motorcycle Show, they blamed the inability to let patch wearers into the LA Calendar Motorcycle Show when it sat next to the Queen Mary for all these years
mm-hmm.
because of something that happened 12 years ago
mm-hmm.
when the event was on the ship. Apparently, somebody was stabbed and killed on the ship. So the city of Long Beach has held this policy, so the promoter said, and we weren't allowed to wear hard colors, so-called cut, into the event. So we switched up because it was summertime in July, and we made T-shirts with the exact same logo on the T-shirt, and we sat in our booth and displayed our custom bikes with our soft colors on, is what
mm-hmm.
we call them. And, you know, I don't know if I can cuss on this show. Is this R or X-rated or what?
You want, but, you know, I just want to let you know you probably drove by me out there when I was outside.
Yeah, and, you know, I had to go out and rescue some soft color wearers because the security is undereducated and they were turning away soft color wearers. And I had to go out and get, you know, some of my friends from, you know, some of the more famous clubs, put it that way, and get them in and try to, you know, not admonish the security because he's just from a hired firm. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, they had one guy in uniform and another guy in plain clothes. And
exactly.
The guy in uniform, this is the exact words. I have a lowrider, and I have two bikes, and my own guys fuck with me. I really don't give a fuck what you guys do out here as long as you don't impede traffic.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, that Long Beach show you're talking about, I had six motorcycles in that show in the Queen Mary. I had friends from Arizona. I had friends from all over to see my bikes and blah, 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 Easy Rider show. And the stabbing occurred just outside the entrance in there. One gentleman decided he didn't have to wait in line. Another club member said, hey, man, we don't need this attitude. Bang, it went on. They locked the gates in. And I had friends of mine that were looking through the glass doors at me and my six bikes.
Mm.
And that's all they ever saw. Because the next day, all of us had to take all of our stuff out of there. So that show is something very clear on my mind, whereas
mm-hmm.
one man with an attitude thought, he didn't have to wait in line. And because of that, the whole show was shut down.
Yeah, we've been to that show, too.
That's cut so heavy into my mind. I've never gone back to that show again, ever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying not to talk trash about any show, but that show recently moved to another venue in Woodland Hills, and you know, the promoter unfortunately spoke some trash to regarding an outlaw club, you know, publicly on a blog, and we had already made a decision to back off of the event because he gave us free space to fill it with bikes and advertise the show to bring attendance. So we were enjoying our motorcycle enthusiasms while we were trying to save yet another show in the city from collapse. But the funny thing was, is he was going to a private venue, and this no-patch policy followed his show to the new venue. So I questioned him about it, and he was like trying to tell me that the owners of the private club didn't want to have patches. And I said, well, I can't be a part of this anymore, because I went to the Long Beach City Council meeting to try to fight for patches at the LA Calendar Motorcycle Show and was told no by the lieutenant and the city manager and the manager of the park. So at least I tried, but I'm not going to go through this again with a private company. And the funny thing is they didn't have to have any police at this private show. All they had to do was hire private security. And I could just see the clusterfuck that was going to take place with having uneducated private security, no police, and then you tell some guy who's...
Well, the private security guys looked at the two guys we were talking to because they had their car parked right by the front, about 30 feet from the driveway. And
right.
Every time they pulled up or whatever, they got out of the car. They basically just sat in the air conditioning watching what was going on.
Just point out, Phil, that you went up there not to attend that program, but sit outside that and to protest and to let people know that they don't want colors in there, and a lot of you people were out there protesting the event in there. So you were not there as a participant. You were not going to go inside.
No.
You were at the gate. I want people to know that because, you know,
we had firemen clubs. We had all kinds of clubs out there.
Yeah. The funny thing was that they allowed us to hang our cuts from our easy ups right next to our motorcycle, but we couldn't wear them. And then, you know, the United States Marine Motorcycle Club came in and they were able to wear their cuts. So it was difficult for us to approach the lieutenant who was running the show that day as far as security. But we had to because we were standing up for our rights, and we said, well, we're going to put our patches on. He says, no, you're not. And I said, well, these guys here have their patches
right on.
And he says, well, it doesn't say the word MC on it. And I brought at least 10 cuts from 10 different clubs that I had sponsoring in these tents that day, and none of them said the word MC. Some of them were unified riding club patches. And I said, I think you guys are so undereducated or overblown or don't even know what you're talking about. You think you're educated because you use the word cut and you're not even a motorcycle rider because of some film that your department showed you, and now you're
totally
on your bike. Force it.
Right.
So, you know, we decided not to be a part of that show anymore, and unfortunately it was boycotted by some pretty serious individuals up there, and his show basically fell apart. And I don't know what's going to happen with his show next year because he's pretty much put himself on the radar with his communication to, you know, the motorcycle patch world, regardless if it's one percenter clubs or if it's riding clubs or just everyday guys that are in bike collecting clubs or whatever. Who like to go to these shows. And I had bikes in the Easy Rider show, and I was walking around and saw, you know, I'm not going to name names, but I saw Outlaw Club patches. I was wearing mine down there at the convention center a couple of years ago, and not one person told me to take my patch off.
No.
And they won't at Easy Rider. They'll let you.
Mm.
Yeah.
In fact,
Las Vegas
years ago was bad, but this year at Vegas, a lot of clubs are all wearing full patches, even though they said can't do this. Some of the casinos were letting the people check into the casinos wearing their patches. So this year, even though they said it was going to be terrible, they let their guards down.
No, I think last year seemed to be more strict with it than this year.
Last year was bad. There was a lot of trouble everywhere last year.
Yeah, last year was worse.
Beefs on Fremont Avenue. We had a lot of beefs going on everywhere, but I saw no beefs anywhere. I saw a lot of clubs that don't get along, recognize each other and nod and just go about their business.
That's like the two guys that stood behind me and you almost the whole night,
yeah,
because we were holding court on the corner.
Well, my understanding with what happened with the LA Ride for Kids was the, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't really get to go to the Love Ride, but there was something that we heard about, I don't know, something happened to a police officer, or I don't know if it was an accident or a killing, or I don't know what happened, but they said that it was something that happened at the LA Ride where a police officer got hurt, and that was why they didn't want to have anything to do with, like, a motorcycle.
Wasn't that the guy that got ran into, Bill, and knocked off his bike?
Yeah. The Love Ride, I got to tell you, I've had a lot of motorcycles, obviously. But in the course of all my events at the Love Ride, when they leave Glendale Harley and they go up to Lake Castaic, it's a 50-mile tour. When the first bike's arriving at Lake Castaic, there's still motorcycles leaving Glendale Harley-Davidson, excuse me. Twice in my career, I've had people, first of all, the pack, you know, is expanding back and forth, courting, if you will. I've had people run into my rear end, and luckily I had a Heritage-style fenders, full fenders in there, because they're looking up at the bridges where everybody was waving and paying attention to my ass, which is kind of important to pay attention to, folks. They're waving at everybody. Twice I've been rear-ended, neither time hard enough to go down, but luckily each time I was hit, it was like center, right on the fender, and my fenders were damaged. Again, I'm not complaining about that, but the amount that people aren't paying attention to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I tell everybody, the passenger wave at the people. You pay attention to damn traffic in front of you.
Right.
Watch out for Bill Kennedy's ass, for God's sake.
Well,
that's a fact. You hit it right on the nail head, you guys. I mean, we are so concerned about our ride making a dirty mark on this entire event. We decided to take our ride down to about 50 miles per hour. We're going to speak to everybody before we leave, which isn't always the gift that Glendale Harley has, because they got people parked on six different streets and you can't reach everybody. But because we're going to be in a parking lot or the street in front of Glendale Harley with a DJ and a speaker system, you know, we're going to say, hey, you know, pay attention to the person in front of you 100% of the time. You look out for the person behind you. You know, we know that we've got beginners and novice and experts all mixed in together, people who may have not even been riding in packs. So we're going to go slow. We got the road captains, and we've got our margin of what's going on, and we have the protection. We don't want to sty in our eye with some type of an accident. And, you know, sometimes the police, everybody sees them motor cops because they're trained so well. They have to go through these rider academies at the police department that they know what they're doing. But the case in point was an officer's funeral in South Bay where two officers, I guess, collided with something else. I can't remember what it was. I think, and they died while the entire procession was going by to bury one of their brothers.
Oh, my gosh.
Shortly after that, it was headline news. Shortly after that, we had our cancer ride, and we had to, you know, prep our road captains that, you know, sometimes we think we're badass riders and we know what we're doing. You know, boots, leathers, helmet, or what, but things can happen, and we need to take all of the extra precautions to minimize and maximize, or minimize the dangers and maximize the fun and the safety.
Right. It's almost like having to predict. That's how I feel when I'm riding. It's almost like you have to predict what that other person's going to do ahead of time.
It's just like when you're going to work on your bike and you're driving with 14,000 cagers on the 405 freeway.
Right. Oh.
Only this time they're all your brothers and sisters on twos, and not all of them know how to ride. Riding a motorcycle isn't for everybody, even though there's a lot of people trying to do it. So keep that in mind, and you will stay safer. Bill and Phil,
I have to
get going.
We thank you for your time tonight. The message is important.
Sorry. And you're welcome to come back.
Please, yes, come back.
Yeah.
For the
refresh everybody's memory again.
Both of you.
I thank you, brothers, for your time and the questions and the allowance to publicize this on your radio show. It's a very important thing to us, and I'm very, very deeply grateful for everything that you do for us.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Phil and Bill, Freedom just walked in, the girl you met at the magazine launch.
Right.
She just walked in. She's running our Freedom All Ladies Ride in the cancer event. She just wanted to say hi.
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
How are we doing?
good. Thank you so much for giving Rick this opportunity to, you know, talk about the Black is Right for Cancer and stuff like that. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate you saying a few words, because as often as we have so many men on the air, it still is nice for a woman to speak, because then other women can say, well, wait a minute, if she's going to be there, maybe I can show up too. This is not just about guys. It's not just about Harleys or Hondas or BMWs. We want women riders at your events, whatever they're doing. So every time he's speaking, if you can get in and say a few words too, and encourage the women riders to show up, help everything.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm a bona fide biker chick, so... I would love to do that. You know,
all
I've
right.
been riding, yeah, I've been riding for 6 years, so I'm all about women riders and, you know, just being women and riding hard and having a good time. So I would love to do that anytime.
When you have these big events, I tell women riders, you may not know anybody when you get there, but I guarantee you, just wait a little bit. People will walk up and talk to you. You may go there without somebody. You will not leave a stranger. You'll have made friends, I guarantee you.
You know, one thing that I'm glad that I was able to start doing, and I didn't plan it, is when I first started riding, I go up to women riders. I feel like, you know, they're my family. We're sisters. I want to get to know them. So I always make a point to approach the women riders, and I've really gained some valuable friendships through the years with a lot of really fabulous, you know, biker chicks, as I call us.
And, Yeah. I just wanted to repeat it because I want to make sure. Freedom is actually from L.A. Harley to Magic Wheels Clubhouse for the third year in a row. Actually, this will be the fourth year, representing the Freedom All Ladies Ride, which is a part of this cancer event. And we put all the women who ride motorcycles up front, or their men that ride them as passengers on the back wearing pink, and then all the guys have to go to the back for just that last leg. So because of the breast cancer aspect of this, because 87% of breast cancer afflicts women and only a small percentage men. So this is their opportunity as supporters of this event. And for the last couple of years, we had Granny riding up there on her motorcycle as well. So Freedom takes these women all the way to Magic Wheels through the street entry with pride, and we want all the women riders to come out, and if you can make it to Glendale and ride the full ride, or at least make it to L.A. Harley, come catch up with us. If you can't, come to the main event and meet. Last year we had 125 female bikers and passengers, so come meet your female bikers.
Right on.
Okay.
Well, I wish you much success, man. I hope you guys rock it this year and meet your goals and keep on working for the big picture.
And you guys, you both have a couple of more shows before your events. And
touch base with
touch
us.
Base
get the
with
message out.
Keep, yeah.
And okay. Saying that, thanks. I'm going to go home and touch my dinner because I'm hungry now.
Okay.
Bye, you guys.
All right, good night.
Good night.
All right, thanks so much, Bill and Phil. You guys rock.
Thank you for everybody calling in tonight. Again, without you calling in, it's just Phil and Bill. So, please, it's all of our show. I tell you that. All of us.
And I'm going to let Axel Rudy Pell take us out.